Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Bonus Point Podcast, Super Rugby Edition, brought to you by Macro Butter, Whale Bird Kombucha, and Osteo Strong LA. My name is TJ Olsen, and man, it feels good to have Super Rugby competitions back. I'm so stoked about this. It's going to be good. But let's jump straight into it. Joining me, as usual, is my guest analyst, Tevita Halafia, a.k.a. Novel Capote. Morena, bro. What's going on? I know you've been busy coaching, you've been training, you've also been in the lab creating some awesome music. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Look, I love that we're watching rugby, and I love that I can watch replays. so man. Next 8 months are going to be beautiful. I was like, make me unemployed, I've got footy, I'm good.
What a time to sit there and go, yeah, I'd much rather be employed and just watch rugby than have a job.
100%.
Well, I can't hold off any longer. I want to get chatting about the Super Rugby over the weekend, and I'm going to switch it up this week because it's just you and me this week, no James. And I want to talk about the rugby in New Zealand first because there's plenty to talk about. The first game I want to talk about was the Highlanders versus the Crusaders. So brilliant match to start off the comp, but I want to talk about missed opportunities during the game specifically. Mm-hmm. So I love my Highlanders, have family ties down in that part of the South Island. They're basically my second team in the comp, and everybody knows how much I love Tony Brown. Tony Brown's, he's an incredible coach. But the Highlanders really frustrated me with some of their decisions at penalty time. I don't know if it was just me or other people, but specifically choosing to back their set piece when the stats don't really back their logic to do so. So I'm going to provide some context for people because we know what we're talking about, but some people may not. So the Highlanders were fourth and fifth in line-out and scrum rankings for the comp last year. The Crusaders starting pack, except for Tom Christie, all blacks or have test match experience. The Crusaders have not conceded a line-out drive, which is, this is crazy, in 3 years. So they haven't conceded a try in 3 years from a line-out drive. And lastly, the Highlanders had seven kickable opportunities. And with Mitch Hunt, they're basically just money in the bank. So I couldn't understand the logic there. So from your point of view, when you were looking at it, do you feel they should have taken those opportunities at goal, or were the Highlanders justified sticking with their set piece?
Look, I think the first few times you justify it. After that, though, you gotta take the points, especially. Yeah. This is to no disrespect to the Highlanders, but you're playing the most successful Super Rugby team of all time. If the points are there, you take the points.
No, I agree with that. But the Crusaders over the weekend, they weren't perfect, but they definitely played a great game. There were three things that really impressed me the most about the Crusaders on the weekend. The first one, Sevu Reese. That one was surprising. He played a blinder. I thought after last season, where a lot of people were questioning his starting spot in the Crusaders due to them having so much depth at outside backs, he had an excellent game. He was dangerous on both sides of the ball. The second was the Crusaders' line-out defense. Just like I saw, haven't conceded a driving maul in over 3 years. That was something that was really cool. They got to keep that streak alive. But the last thing, I really always look at this every time I watch the Crusaders, was their efficiency at the breakdown. As soon as they're hitting the deck from a tackle, their support players are immediately prepping to get over the ball over the next phase. Most Super Rugby teams usually do that quite well, but the Crusaders are just a level beyond that. It's just when they want quick ball, they're just so effective and so dangerous because they can get it out. So do you think when you look at the Crusaders organization and efficiency when it comes to their gameplay, is that something that just puts them a step above a lot of teams in the comp?
Yeah, and it's not just them as a Super Rugby franchise. It filters down into their clubs, into their national team too. So I just think that they're a machine that doesn't need fixing. It's just a well-oiled machine and everyone. Here's the thing. The Crusaders do this really well. Everyone plays their position perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and in regards to Sevu, and that's the thing, like, you know, Sevu Reese, he knew that last year was a terrible season for him personally. He knows that that the Crusaders reward talent and hard work, and he knew that if he didn't put in a big off season, he wouldn't be playing rugby this year, or at least be in the mind frame to start. And I think what we saw is someone that put in a big off season, and more than he looks faster, he looks fitter. And he looks smarter, and his core skills and handling skills have gone through the roof. So, you know, and that's what the Crusaders machine does. Oh, you're good? Be great. Oh, you're great? Be awesome. Oh, you're awesome? be an All Black. Oh, you're an All Black? Be the best All Black. Do you know? It's just, that's what you get. Do you know what I mean? They don't have to have a great game as a team. But if that team can all put together 50% of their potential, they're almost unbeatable.
Yeah. I think that's something that really, really comes into question is when you have so much talent and so many people vying for an option when it comes to playing for the Crusaders, if you have an off game, if you have one, you're on notice. If you have multiple, they've got plenty of other people that you can slot in that position and go, see you later. We'll sign this kid to an academy contract, and he may not be just as good, but he'll come and he'll play like he is.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And that's what we saw versus a Highlanders team that were really trying really hard, but they just didn't have the goods.
Yeah, no, I think that's something that I'm going to be excited watching, because Crusaders, as much as I dislike them and they won four in a row, they play some good footy, man. So it's going to be
awesome.
You know
what? I also think, too, Aaron Smith overplayed his hand, and this weekend was actually a great weekend to highlight how halfbacks can do that. And this is one game we'll talk about. We'll talk about another game in the Australian comp. I think Aaron Smith really overplayed his hand. I thought Brent Hall was all over him that whole game.
Yeah.
I thought Brent Hall was amazing. It was like to no disrespect to Brent Hall, but it was like watching Aaron Smith play Aaron Smith from 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
8 years ago, Aaron Smith is possibly the greatest halfback of all time.
Yeah. He's obviously still pushing that. Like he's competing a lot of people, but there's sometimes where he does overplay his hand. And I think that's where they're not necessarily like leaning specifically on him. But when you add so much of a shadow figure around Aaron Smith and you put so much expectation on that, they're bound to go, okay, we can get out of this corner that we've painted because we've got Aaron Smith and Ash Dixon. It's something, yeah. So it's something where Bryn Hall, he didn't have the most amazing game, but he definitely did provide a lot to that Crusaders outfit that did very well.
Yeah, I thought the two big points that I've got is his support play was astonishingly better, and his delivery and quick ball from the ruck and mauls. If it went down the ruck, he was there and it was gone. And if it was a maul, you could see him literally, like every great halfback, slapping ass, yelling at his forwards. And when he wanted the ball came out. And that's just the Highlanders forwards just didn't, whether they didn't hear it, but it just wasn't as drilled. And those core moments, that's where the Crusaders got on top of the Highlanders.
Yeah, and I think when you've got a guy like Mitch Drummond coming off the bench, oh, man, so good, so freaking good. But
so good.
Yeah, but I think the one thing, just to finish off on Bryn Hall, is the one thing I, like you said, his pass, his consistency about every time, his form, it's on money. You always see his hand finishing at the end of it right there, going straight to where his target is, where a lot of other halfbacks, they back themselves, they just pass the ball, but their form isn't very consistent. But we'll move on. We'll talk about the next comp, the next game that was in the Aotearoa comp, the Hurricanes versus the Blues. This season, we see Artie step into the captaincy role, but you can see it hasn't changed his effectiveness in his gameplay. I believe personally, though, it's improved his field awareness. So some of his decision-making has really gone to it. So I think the perfect example is that Al Muatroi. Artie had multiple opportunities to do what he does best. He takes space, he rumbles through contact, he disconnects the defense. But on two or three phases before that, you see him play selfless rugby. He distributed multiple times to open space, which helps set up the try. So we obviously know that he can do that already because of his training with the All Blacks 7s and the All Blacks 15s, and he just has that skill set. But you can see his priorities have kind of shifted on the field, and it makes it more cognizant of what the team needs. So the one question I want to see, if you've seen it prior, are priorities changing for a player a common trend when you've seen players step into that captaincy role?
I think they think all players that get into that position think that they do, and I think only the great ones actually can execute that properly. I think Sam Kane, as much as I thought, I think that he's probably not the best number 7 for the All Blacks. As soon as he plays in that All Blacks jersey as a captain, he's amazing. And I think Artie Sevier is one of those guys, and I dare say Artie Sevier could be a future All Blacks captain. And on the weekend, in a losing team, I think he was personally the best on ground. He played. He was an amazing guy. And I agree with what you said. You could see – it was almost like you could see his head ticking, just like, you know, let's – he knew when to slow it down, knew when to pick it up. He knew – do you know what I mean? He wasn't – and he wasn't afraid to just, like, put his foot down. You know, you and I know personally I like looking at player management from a captain's point of view, and I like communication from a captain to his players. And one thing I picked up with Artie is eye-to-eye contact with his players, and when he spoke, they listened. And I think that's such an important trait. And it seems like, well, all players would to their captain. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
It's definitely not the case.
Especially in New Zealand, and you know, in the Aotearoa comp, you've got great players that don't, you know, necessarily individually are probably the greatest in the world, but they don't. I suppose there's an ego that they don't have to listen to their captain. But you see Artie, and you saw everyone just like, yes sir, no sir, all right, let's go. And I'm really keen to see how he leads this pack around this season.
Yeah, well, I think the one thing I was worried about was the lack of halfbacks in the Hurricanes. So they're obviously missing TJ Perenara. He's gone overseas to go play. And then they obviously had Jamie Booth that could have stepped in that position, who played awesome rugby last season, but they didn't have him either because of injury. I was actually quite surprised and quite impressed with Jonathan Tamateni. He's a former Chiefs player in the Super Rugby comp, and now he's stepped into that halfback role. I don't know if they're going to look at utilizing him every week, but I think he was a great addition. I think he was able to move the pack around. He was your little niggly guy as you want in your halfback. He was putting everyone on blast. But what did you think about him on the weekend?
Yeah, he was a surprise, to be honest with you. Look, I've been I think him and Garden Batcher need to work on that combo a bit more.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But I liked what I saw.
Mm.
I think he brings a physicality to that to the halfback slot that I think when you've got Fifita, Savia, and is it Devin?
Yep.
There, who are quite digressing, they were probably the biggest, fastest back three I've seen in quite a while. Like, they just got around the field. So, and it's not often you see like Satutu, Papali'i, and Ioane being challenged on a physical level. And I was like, man, you guys aren't getting around the field as well as these guys. But and what I liked with Jonathan is just seeing him, he was there the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, look, big shoes to fit.
Oh, definitely.
But I also think, nothing against TJ, but again, TJ last year was a guy that overplayed his hand a little bit. Just having a nine that distributes and just does his job, I think it could be an asset, but also could be a big downfall come when, you know, you start playing, you know, into finals if they make it.
Yeah, no, I think after this week, I've definitely been not necessarily proven wrong, but I'm going to give them more chances to have a crack this season because, yeah, I think some of the pieces that I thought weren't going to mesh very well, I think I got proven wrong over the weekend. They've definitely got potential. We'll see. But to wrap up this conversation about the Super Rugby Aotearoa stuff, let's chat about the Blues really quick. One thing I really like from the Blues this season is their depth at front row. It's just incredible. I'm still steaming that Nepo Lalala left the Chiefs to go play for the Blues. I'm still pissed, bro.
Can we call him a sellout? I will never call it to his face, but I'll say it on a podcast.
I did it on Instagram. You posted something, and then I was sitting there going, Nepo, you traitor. And I was like, jokes, please don't hurt me. Please don't kill me. Yeah, but
he's not the smallest lad in the world.
Oh, no, I'm just like, even if he was, I still wouldn't want to go up against him. But it astounds me how much front row experience they could have in 123. They've got three All Blacks. They've got Lau Lala, they've got Tunga Fasi, and they've got Big Carl with that epic moustache. I love it. Plus, they've got Lay, who's a younger player, who's come up through the system. He's a great prop. He was put in, I think, the Super Rugby Aotearoa Team of the Week because he had a field day. And they've still got a depth. They've got Renata and a couple other guys with Super Rugby or at least Mitre 10 Cup experience that could step up. With this Lau Lala move, do you think that the Blues, it makes them the most dangerous front row in the comp, or does this crown go to someone else?
No, 100%. You'd be silly to think otherwise. And here's the big thing. Tui Kanafe, Tuonga Fasi, and Lau Lala are some of the best props in the world when it comes to set piece. They are, they're probably your part of your top five. So I think it definitely, the business end of the season, they're going to start winning games. You're going to see them taking scrums a lot more because
if you're
smart like they did in the weekend, they're only playing 45 minutes, and then you bring in your All Black front row. Like, come on now.
even if they split it in even 40, like they obviously wouldn't do it. I think 45 is probably the sweet spot because as soon as you bring those guys on, like having Tuonga Fasi and Tua Kanafe come off the bench. It's just insane. Like, I can't think of one forward pack that if you start packing them against the scrum and if they're buggered, or even if you get new players come on the field and they want to scrum against them, game over. Good luck. But yeah, it's going to be also good.
Too, it, having Tui Kanafe and Tuonga Fasi off the bench is very dangerous come that ruck and maul time because they are kamikazes. Give me the ball. off the rock, and I'm gonna cause some damage. So it's gonna be like, and this is sort of why I think the Blues take it out this year in the Aotearoa comp. Just given that's you've got big nuke missiles ready to go. Plus,
they're not just meter readers. They can move around. Tuonga Fasi, he's fit as hell. So he was frigging in the offseason pulling a Ford four-wheel drive as his scrum machine. That's insane. But the Blues and what?
I said you don't.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah, I do it every Saturday. Yeah, just start pulling my Nissan Frontier. Everyone's sitting there going, "What are you doing, TJ? You're the man." Yeah, no, all good. But the Blues ended up coming away with a win in the end. A lot of people were questioning their decision making as well, especially in the first half.
Yeah,
you could see Coach Leon McDonald he was just furious at mistakes or missed opportunities they made. But before I get your opinion, I've got a good example of this poor decision-making skills. And this was something from last season that really, really bugged me. So a lot of people are going to hate me because he's a ponies boy. But in my opinion, it was the right decision for him to be utilized at 13. But the past two seasons, Rico Ioane has just been basic things when you need in your 13 repertoire, whatever you need. He's just not cutting the mustard. One thing is running through the defensive line when you're a decoy runner. If you don't get the ball, you run through. You don't run through and then go, don't get the ball and then stop right there.
Right.
Basically do a shepherd and then keep going. Like it was just insane. I couldn't even count how many times on my hands, how many times he did that. He only got penalized for a handful, but it just killed me because he would just kept on getting penalties for instruction. I know he provides a lot of athleticism and talent, but it's little things like that that just could put them over the top. If he's able to do those little things, they'd be sweet. So when you look at Rico's gameplay, do his raw abilities and athleticism, do they make up for what he may lack in his decision-making or those little tweaks here and there?
I don't think it's going to last for too much longer. I think that you're running thin now. And I think where his brother has had to work for his spot, I think in regards to fitness and, doesn't have that natural ability. I think Rico Ioane really needs to work on his core skills because things like that, he's cost not just Auckland, but the All Blacks some costly errors. And, you can't, the All Blacks, you can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have the brain to go with it, what's the point? So, and it's very frustrating, very frustrating. Maybe it's an age thing, and a simple maturity thing. Could be an ego thing, but yeah, it's not going to last too long because that athleticism, there's a million other guys out there that may not have that natural talent but got the rugby smarts.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. When you look at the All Blacks perspective, that's why I was so worried about last season for him specifically when he messed up that try when he knocked it on because he did that stupid one hand thing And I was sitting there going, see you later. He's not going to be back in the 23 for the rest of the tournament. Like, they've got plenty of people that can jump in that spot. Obviously, he came off the bench and then in the next game and the game after that, and he had to earn his way back. But yeah, if that was anyone else, he'd see you later. Like, that doesn't happen. But
it's getting old now, dude. It's getting real old. Like, bro, you silly penalties, man. Not good. Danny Black, though, he played bloody great.
Mate, so I think if anybody wants to tip someone who's going to put themselves in the All Black system this season, it's got to be him. His consistency has just been killing it. He hasn't come off a good season last season and then just tried to do just enough. He's doing even more now. He's just become that. You've obviously got Richie Mwanga. He's the All Blacks 10. He's probably one of the greatest 10s in world rugby at the moment, if not the greatest. Yep. But Oteti's just making a case for him. A lot of people will say, oh, well, you've got Jordy and you've got Damien who can play 10 and they can play fullback as well. So the versatility, I would much rather have a 10 at that caliber than have someone who's playing like a double 10.
Look, there's no, you know, there's no Bodhi this year, right? Mm-hmm. So they need to get two 10s. I'm sorry. That's how they have to play it. And they are right now Richie Mwanga and Oteti Black. And for me, that's end of discussion. You know, you can let Jordy stay in his outside backs, although I still think he's too slow for wing. And Damian McKenzie just needs to stay as an outside back reserve and an impact player. But, you know, if Oteti Black continues his form, he definitely will deserve a call-up. And I think a bench spot for sure.
Well, I agree with that because I don't see Caleb Trask getting a start or getting a shot in the All Blacks. I don't see Garden Bashup. Even though I do like Garden Bashup, I don't think he's the 10 you need in the All Blacks. And then when you look at who else is it? You've got the Hurricanes or the Highlanders. When you see you've obviously got Ioane and you've got Mitch Hunt. They're having good seasons as well. But Oteti Black, I think he's a step beyond. So hopefully we'll see that happen because I would love to see him in an All Blacks jersey. He's played plenty of Māori All Blacks games, but
now's the time too. You know, we've got a couple of years before the World Cup. Let's just see how he goes.
Yeah, this would be the perfect time to test it out, I reckon, too. But we'll be jumping on the Sky Sports tipping competition. We'll be picking each week who we think will win the games and how many trials will be scored as well. We missed last week because I was pretty off it. I missed the boat, but I just locked in my picks for this week. Been busy last week, but we all love a cheeky bet, me, you and James and a few other boys. So we're going to share our leaderboard every week and see who's winning. I'm nervous about this one because I don't know if I'll do well or I'll do really well, but let's transition to talk into Super Rugby AU and we'll talk about the Reds and the Rebels match. So we spoke about this previously during the week. So the Reds played a very up-tempo game with a lot of it initiated by Tate McDermott, but it also forced a lot of errors, plus created a lot of disconnection between the Reds. So let's talk about this. So the idea that you need to reevaluate during a game when it's not working, your game plan, is this something that lies on the shoulders of O'Connor as the new captain, or is it Tate McDermott that needs to sense this and make a better decision?
It's James O'Connor. He's the captain. And, you know, I've got multiple notes about that game. And James O'Connor just wasn't a captain. He didn't make decisions. And I feel as though whether or not it came from Brad Thorne down, that Tate gets to, you know, if he sees it, to go for it, then Tate McDermott needs to have a good look at himself because he was making the wrong decisions. And James O'Connor needed to hold him up after the first few. He needed to tell him, mate, calm down. Let's just play some footy.
I think that's something where it necessarily falls both on their shoulders, but I do agree with you. I believe although Tate McDermott did have that opportunity to have a look at the game and go, okay, maybe it's not working. Maybe I should dial it back a little bit and take a few less quick taps and try and go. But yeah, I think if it comes from anyone, it should be James O'Connor. He should be looking at him straight away when he sees the last couple and go, hey, not working. Let's have a think.
Yep, definitely. I think what we saw with Queensland was Melbourne never looked like a threat. Mm-hmm. So why are we quick tapping? Set it up, you'd have to do a scrum. You could, you know, just hit the line out of those quick tap in between the tens. Like, just take it old school. Take a tap, start rucking, because they were doing really well, I thought. And I thought if their back line could just get the ball, they were just going to put on multiple tries against the Rebels. And, you know, the Reds the Reds deserve to win. In that they just looked way more threatening, but they also made way more mistakes when they had ball in hand.
Yeah. I think that's what kept the Rebels in this game. It's not necessary. Like, when you look at the team on paper next to the Reds, Tamua had a good game. I think there were some decisions he could have made different. But the other one I want to talk about is Joe Powell. So his insert into Melbourne. So I think if the Reds wouldn't have made those decisions, we would have been talking about a different game score in the end. But Joe moving to Melbourne, I don't think it was a very surprising move because of how well Nick White has been playing for the Brumbies since he's come back from overseas. But he's a definite upgrade from the Rebels in the halfback department. When we were talking about the halfbacks last season, I can't even tell you the names of those guys. All I know is that one of the halfbacks looked like he hit the gym more than he did hit the training pitch, because he just looked like he was ripped. He had massive arms. I'm not gonna hate. That's what it just looked like. But from your opinion, what does the insert of the experience of Joe Powell for the Rebels do this season for them?
Look, this is gonna sound super mean. Joe Powell is an amazing. Amazing halfback. Mm-hmm. I just think Dave Essels hasn't done much recruitment or good retention. And let's not forget, Matt Timor didn't have a job 10 days ago. So, you know, Matt got fired and then rushed back into the team.
Oh, what? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I hope I'm not making this up, but I read it online that, he wasn't welcomed, and then
Did you read it on Wikipedia or Reddit? Because it might be wrong.
No. Well, they interviewed him before the game too, and he touched on it. But I think, like, there's, like, you know, Matt and Joe, Melbourne were lucky to have them together, because they're such a, you know, they go back years and years. And I think, you know, although I've been quite critical of Matt, that relationship with Joe will help the Rebels. Mm-hmm. But I just, like, Reese Hodge, I just can't see him being better. This sounds mean too. Like, who's he going to be better than when it comes to, you know, his counterparts in the other teams? And I just think that when push comes to shove, the experience that Joe Powell brings and the awesomeness that he has is just going to fall on a lackluster back line that will be struggling this season.
Yeah. I think the funniest thing that I found was, because we were talking about it last week, is how well Stan Sport is getting to, like, close to the action. And they, like, even the pregame stuff was really cool. But they were doing the pregame matchup stuff, and they were like, oh, Maddie, can you walk us through what you're doing when you're trying to kick for points or kick
I saw that. Penalty? That was putting me on the spot, the poor dude.
And then he was sitting there going, can you just leave me alone, please? And then he was like, okay, so I'll just show you guys something. He just put it on the line. He was like, yeah, what I want to do is, when I'm practicing, I'm just going to kick straight down the line. And he did that. And they were like, asking him all these questions. He's like, you could just see it on his face. He was sitting there going, leave me alone. I want to prep for this game. I understand that this is a new concept, but can we plan this better?
Right, yeah. I felt sorry for him. He took it. And, you know, it was funny is because, like, we know him personally. You know, he's just got that dry humor. And so it was funny because I'm like, man, people are either going to love you or hate you right now, my dude.
Yeah, I bet you there are some people on the watching the game going, oh, this guy's terrible. Why would they put him on the spot and be like, no, because they literally put him on the spot. He's sitting there going, you're asking me all these random things while I'm trying to prep for a Super Rugby game. Oh, man.
Okay. So, but look, I think Joe Powell is an amazing halfback, and he's just really unlucky to, you know, having to leave the Brumbies. But, you know, I wish that they had a bit more flair in the back line, so that, because he's quite a running halfback, and I really like him.
Yeah.
You know, directing traffic like that. But, you know, we'll see. Who knows? Like I said, who knows? I think the weekend showed us who the strong contenders are, and who needs a bit of work. So anything can happen.
Yeah, we'll see. But here's a tough one. I'm glad our mate James isn't here to talk about this in this next game, because the Waratahs had a pretty tough one. Their points record now over two games is 102-17. So that's not very good. One person that is copping a lot of heat, though, obviously, is their coach, Rob Penny. So some people are calling for Rob Penny's job, saying that he hasn't delivered what he promised with his team. And this is coming from his hiring in 2019. Others are actually arguing that they have to consider, before we push Penny out to pasture, there are other factors. So Penny's former teammate, Andrew Mertens, said the Waratahs weren't awful, preferring to praise the defending champion Brumbies and former Wallabies centre, Morgan Turinui, described the Brumbies' 9 try stampede as one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen. So that's something that I think has some validation. I think we should technically take a look at the teams before we go, the Waratahs were terrible. We need to look at who they're playing, because when you look at it, they're the two best Super Rugby sides in Super Rugby AU, and they're potentially maybe top five when you look at the teams in regards to the Trans-Tasman top six, if you consider where the Brumbies sit that, or the Reds, where they sit on that for this season in contention. But Penny, he comes with great coaching experience. He isn't just brushing these losses aside. When the questions were raised at the press conference, whether he's worried about his job, he said he's more than happy to go gracefully if other people, close brackets, determine he is not the right man for the New South Wales moving forward. So I want to ask you this. Should we be worried about Penny losing his job, or do people need to take into consideration the teams that he's had to play in the first 2 weeks?
Russ, this is what I don't like about people that don't know the game and the business side of it. Mm-hmm. This poor bugger has had to deal with players being injured, players leaving. He would have, in all reality, he would have understood that this is going to be a tough season. And his squad that he had, he would have, and him and his coaching staff would have definitely done their homework. If anyone in that New South Wales board are trying to kick him out, they're just Muppets, mate. Like, you're just seriously, what do you expect? Okay. This comes from recruitment and retention. If you can't do that, don't expect, what are you expecting a coach to do? Like, pull out miracles. Yeah. And you know, the two games that they've had, they've just played, like you said, like you've played two teams who are now, the Brumbies are probably on paper the strongest team in Australia. Mm-hmm. They've got Wallabies coming out the Yahoo, and they've got combinations in key places that know how to work. And you've got the Reds, who have worked on this for the last 4 years and are now just in a place to start, you know, dictating where they want to go, and however, you know, they want to act is how they're going to play. So both these two teams have everything needed to be successful. And the Waratahs are just taking L's at the moment, and that's not the coach's fault. Mm-hmm. You don't have a squad of 40 with, you know, a lackluster of international caps because of the coach. That's a whole other discussion. So
yeah,
and I think he's a great coach. I think he's the right man for the job. It's just going to be a tough slog for the next 2 years. But I think he can definitely pull this team together. It's a young team. And a young team with a lot of experience too, from the 20s and club level. So I think they're going to, I think, stick it out. I honestly can't see them firing him. And if they do, then I hope the board at New South Wales all houses burn on fire, because you're all a bunch of
Well, I mean, when it comes to the ARU, I'm not saying this in a mean way, but anything's possible. So. So when it comes to the particular Super Rugby franchises, we've seen people fired over worse. But I think you make an excellent point. It's something where we've seen it in multiple sports. They've got the youngest squad in both competitions, in Super Rugby AU and Super Rugby Aotearoa. They're in a rebuilding time frame at the moment, and they've got to understand that. And they've had injuries out wazoo. So I think when you look at that, give them a few weeks. I think it's the same thing I said with Fozzie last year, is the All Blacks didn't look like the All Blacks when they went and played last year, but they had to deal with COVID. They had to deal with so many other factors where people were away from their families, people had to travel. It was just so different. So I think give him a shot, everyone. If you're calling for his job, you jump in and try and do it. So
yeah, you're an idiot. Shut up.
Well, I think there are quite a few people on the Brumby side that we can say had a pretty good game because they had a melee of scoring opportunities. The person I personally was impressed, though, the most is the guy who got the hat-trick. He was Mac Hansen. So he's been in the Brumby system for a while. He's played for the Junior Wallabies, and he's only had a handful of caps with the Brumbies due to injuries and his position being so competitive. Dan McKellar really likes him, and I think we'll be seeing a lot of him this season. He just played friggin' phenomenal. But who were you most impressed with when you were looking at that Brumbies team?
Dude, Ari Simone and Ikita on the centers. Yep. Wow, man. I've been waiting for a center pairing like this for a long time in Australian rugby.
Yeah.
And I just love watching it. I'm here for it. And I think Lolo Sio is really coming into his own as well. I still think he has some brain farts when he should pass the ball and he doesn't.
Yeah.
But I think... Yeah, look, Ikita and Simone are going to be a problem this year, man. And I'm going to love seeing them play the Reds. And I think when they do, they should play Baisami at 12 and Pataya at 13.
I knew you were coming with that. Oh, man. Yeah, because you got four guys you can slot into the Wallabies very easily. I think if you were able either to pick either of those pairings at 12, 13, they'd be good for the Wallabies. I think I would like to see personally, I would like to see Paisami and Simone, the pairing. We saw it with the Wallabies, but I would like to see, now that they've both got Wallabies experience, I would like to see that in the Wallabies, just to see how they can bat other countries. But yeah, bro, you put both of those guys in a Wallabies jersey and going head to head in Super Rugby.
Ooh, yeah, man.
On. It's gonna be good stuff.
Their combination. Just disgusting.
You know,
from a standing still, they can move mountains. I'm like, and I'm here for it.
And I'm gonna love watching this.
Yeah, it's great. And it's beautiful to watch. So those are the two players I'm watching across all rugby. I'm watching. Those are the two dudes I'm excited for, and I think they're gonna have big seasons.
Nah, it's going to be a good one. Okay. Well, was there anything else about the Super Rugby AU comp that you really liked this week, or you just...
You know what? I've got a bone to pick with the Queensland...
I hope not with me.
No. What's going on with the amount of penalties that the Reds are giving away?
I saw that too. I was watching that game on the weekend. I was sitting in bed... I didn't get to watch it live because I had stuff to do, but I was watching the replay. I didn't understand it either. I was trying to sit there and go, it's just simple crap. But I think it comes down to me personally, just them pushing the limits a little bit. I kind of see Brad Thorne as one of those coaches that goes, hey, keep doing this until you get told not to, and then dial it back a little bit. Because I think he's the type of guy that would try and pawn that away.
Right. I just didn't understand it because I sort of was looking at it and I'm like, guys, like, what are we doing here? It just annoyed me. And in particular, no offense, Nella, but mate, you should not be being out scrummed.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And he was numerous times, and it annoyed me. I thought it was unfair, and I thought that not unfair. I thought you're just being a silly sausage, bud. Like, this shouldn't be happening.
Well, I mean, we've seen that here and there with him when it comes to Super Rugby, and one or so times when we see him coming to the Wallabies, it's not necessarily his maturity levels, because we know.
Those
a bit here and there, because every time he comes on the screen when he's on the bench, he's picking people's noses and stuff like that. But I think when it comes to I'm definitely not gonna. I'm for that as well. It's great. But I think when it comes to that, he's the kind of guy that it's not necessarily caring. It's just the fact where he likes to push the boundaries as well, is because he's such a dominant force. He's going, who's gonna mess with me? He'll just keep getting those little things here and there to try and push the boundaries.
Well, and but this is the big problem, is they had all around, give me 2 secs, over 40% of their possession in their half, that's where most of the penalties came. So you've played, of your 60%, 61% of percentage of possession, 40 of it is in their half, and you're letting those penalties, and you're just relieving that. When they're going to play the Brumbies, that's a problem. When they go play these Aotearoa teams, that's a big – when you play the Blues and the Crusaders, that is a huge problem.
Do you think that's where Wright comes in as a better captain, as O'Connor? He's able to control that and game manage that more often?
No, you know what? I think James O'Connor is 100% the right man to captain this team around and lead this team around. I think Tate McDermott needs to be benched and Sarovi needs to start.
I'm for that. I would love to see Sarovi get some more game time.
Yep. I think and I'm on the Tate McDermott bandwagon. I've been on that.
You? No. You don't like Tate McDermott. You haven't been raving about him for years under your breath every time someone else is trying to talk.
I may have bumped into him a couple of times last year and pinched his bum. I don't know. Either that or that's a good-looking butt from someone else.
There you go.
But I think he needs to just have a look at the game that's being played, let James O'Connor make some decisions. Sarovi to James O'Connor, when Sarovi came on in whatever it was, like the 50th minute, the ball delivery, they were flowing just a little bit better. And it was almost like James O'Connor wasn't trying to battle anyone to make some decisions. And it slowed down. You're playing a team where they were just better. Queensland were just better across the park. So given them that time that they could do, they were doing more damage. So I don't know. Like the penalties, that needs to calm the heck down. Tate McDermott needs to, really just respect the game a bit more. And also, and this is controversial, drop Angus Scott-Young to the bench. Sakai Lotto at the start at blind. And because I want to see how him, Saru Uru, and Angus Blythe play. Because on the weekend, I really liked how Uru played, and I thought Blythe was so-and-so.
Yeah, so I'll agree with that. I didn't really – it's not necessarily something where he played a bad game, but I think when you look at the pros and cons list, I think that he provides more on the bench. Yeah.
Right.
I think he,
My final thought, sorry, just because I'm on the Reds right now. This is my ultimate backline this year. So,
okay. All right, I want to hear it.
Just for the moment from what we've seen. So Robbie at 9, James O'Connor at 10. Vunivalu at 11. Dangunu at 14. And in the centers, I have Hunter Paisami at 12. Jordan Pataia at 13. With Jock Campbell at the back. And we're going to call it the black line.
Oh my god.
Yes, I got it in.
There you go. But you still have James O'Connor at 10. How can it be the black line?
Hey, look, man, as long as there's more brothers in there, so, yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying, bro.
Okay, I'll pay that. I mean, that'll be interesting. I think I am really liking what Pataia is doing on the wing, but I think if you can put Vunivalu and Dangunu there and put him at that 13 spot. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Well, here's the thing. I think Vunivalu on the wing adds more with the new rules in play than Hamish Stewart does at 12.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think James has spoken about it prior, like your balance when it comes to your back row. I think when it comes to your back line as well, is having that rough and tumble guy who's big and he can make those big moments in on one wing, and then you've got on the other wing, you've got that guy who's very evasive. He can just get his way out of everything. When you have both of those threats, I think it's pretty good. I think they'll be definitely dangerous. I would love to see that. Hopefully Brad Thorne's listen.
Yeah, but I mean Pataia, he's got the Ioane syndrome. Just can't hold on to a ball. Like,
oh my god. Yeah. No, bro. I don't even want to go into that because we'll be here for another 15 minutes. Like, I can't. Because basics, you know how much I preach basics when it comes to that basics. Stuff. See you later. Okay. Cool.
We're basic. Wait, what?
Hey, I got no problem with that. I like being basic. I don't want to be extra. That's all I don't want to be. Well,
no sizzle, just salt and pepper, bruz.
That's literally all I've been eating. But okay. All right, let's move on. It's called the bonus point for a reason, and today is gonna be a quick one. News came down today that due to the increase of COVID-19 cases in New Zealand, the Women's Rugby World Cup has now been postponed until the March of 2022. Obviously, the Black Ferns are favourites as it's their home tournament and they've won most of the Women's World Cups because they're just gangster. However, this raises questions that there will be teams that will be able to come out stronger now that they have additional prep time. So, okay. Just bear with me. I know that it's not going to happen. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but there is possibility for it. So, Hulla, if you had to pick one team that could take down the Black Ferns now that they have additional time to prep, who would you pick?
On a very serious note, I think this aids Australia the most in that they're going to get a Super W under their belt. Mm-hmm. They're going to be able to have a look at their sevens players that'll play at the end of the Super W season.
Yep.
And actually have a stronger squad coming into camp if they wanted to choose. They also are going to have some of their rugby players that went to the NRLW.
Mm, yep.
Come back. And if you haven't been watching last year, the NRLW, some of those girls, so I think this will greatly help the Australian team even recruit some players to come over. Mm-hmm. I also think England are going to have a good chance too, but not for the same reasons. I just think they're going to have a lot more prep time to facilitate combinations and whatnot. But I'm interested. I still think New Zealand take it. I can't see New Zealand losing, especially at home.
I personally can't see them losing either. But I'm going to throw out a dark horse here, okay? So this one, I know you usually stick to the controversial statements, but this one's going to be pretty controversial. Just because how well they've been doing with managing COVID in their area, I'm going to say Canada.
Here is why.
Here is why. It's because... One, when I saw them, what was it? I think a year ago. No, it's 2 years ago now because COVID just took away a year of my life. when I saw them 2 years ago when they had the San Diego Super Series, they had the Black Ferns, they had Canada, the US, and they had England. Canada were taking it against all those teams. Although the Black Ferns blasted out most of them in the second half, Canada were just such a good side. They were able to hold their own every time. They've got some really dangerous backs. Their scrummaging was quite decent. I think they topped it when it came to just under the Black Ferns. But I think with the way they're managing COVID and this additional prep time, I think they're going to be able to make a push. I'm not going to say they're going to win it because I think it's going to be an Australia Wallaroos and Black Ferns final, depending on – I don't know what the pools are looking like, but I'm pretty sure it will be those two. But, yeah, I think Canada is definitely going to be the dark horse on this one.
Yeah, we're gonna see. Also, good for us because that means we can actually go down to New Zealand, hopefully.
Dude, that's why I was so conflicted. I was sitting there going, "This is terrible," because I know a bunch of the Black Ferns girls that are like super excited for this. It's coming up real soon. It's gonna be great atmosphere. But then COVID started happening again, and everyone was saying how much New Zealand was doing some like a better job than everyone else, but they were still getting cases. So it's just pretty rough, but I think this will be good. I think the World Rugby made the right decision on postponing it because there's just nothing we can do when it comes to this kind of stuff. So 100%. Yeah. So it'll be interesting, but,
sneaky 10,000 on New Zealand, but,
oh man,
you won't do it. You're scared.
Yeah, I won't do it. I'm not. I'm. That's too rich for my blood. I'll put a sneaky 100. Maybe if I get a couple of beers in me, I'll do a sneaky 1,000. Definitely not a sneaky 10,000. I'm not Jordan Belfort. I'm not going to try and just back that. Oh, that's terrible. Right?
Oh, could you imagine?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, if any. See, this is why I hate when people think guaranteed bets, because like, when you look at it on paper, there's no one who is more dominant than Black Ferns, but it's always that one time when you think you got it in the bag and it just goes out. But
look, you know, as an All Black supporter, the French team really they've killed me. They've killed me. Yeah. And we're playing them first at the World Cup in 23.
Oh yeah. So that's gonna be good. Ooh, I can't wait to talk about that. But All right, cool. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to another episode of the Bonus Point Podcast. Be on the lookout for our Major League Rugby episodes returning very soon because the MLR is making its return, including a new segment I'm putting together based around my local LA Giltini. Stay tuned for that one. I'll be posting up some more information very soon on social media. But Hala, thank you. It's always a pleasure. Love having you on the show. Any final words?
No, just looking forward to Thursday, 10 p.m. my time, our time, so we can watch some Super Rugby, baby.
Oh, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. I can't wait. Well, everyone stay safe out there. I know COVID's still tearing a hole in basically every country that I know, but stay safe in this crazy world. We'll catch you next week. Have a good day, guys.
See you, guys.